You are listening to The Maurer Report, a live radio show that ventures into the mysteries of life, as well as the hot topics of the day, either political or business.
Thank everybody for joining us on this program. Before we begin, I got to remind everybody that the next podcast will be with, or next show, actually live show, I do these live, I don't know why I said podcast, words creep into my head, will be the Rendlesham Forest conspiracy with Nick Redfern. Been looking forward to that for over a month now, so that'll be next week. But this week, I welcome Travis Irvine to the program. Travis, thank you so much for, I know it's been a busy day and we'll get into that here in a second, but first and foremost, thank you for making some time for me.
Hey, thanks for having me, Jim, and happy almost inauguration day.
Yeah, I mean, it's been a wild ride to get here. So, okay, let's work backwards. You're in D.C. tonight. I seen it in an email and I didn't write it down. Who are you working for? Who are you covering inauguration day for tomorrow? So we can follow up with all that.
Oh, sure. Well, I am a freelance journalist, so this is kind of coming full circle for me. 4 years ago, I was covering the inauguration of Trump. For a news outlet called Mediaite.com. Mediaite, they kind of do news about news. So, you can find them on Twitter and Facebook and all the things. But they really are focused on covering news celebrities almost. What are the news anchors saying? When does a segment on CNN go off the rails? Things like that. So 4 years ago, I was actually got hired as a new position as their man on the street. And my job was kind of like a TMZ to catch these news celebrities outside of Fox or, outside of CNN. And I even got to be on the red carpet at the White House, correspondence, press dinner, whatever it's called. It's got a very long name. I can never remember.
I know what you're talking about, but I don't know the name. I don't know the full name of it. So
yeah, so that was, that was 2017. That was like Trump's first year, and of course he skipped out on it. So everyone was still in a great mood. So, like you said, although I think that's the understatement of the year, it's been a hell of a journey to get here. And for me, I wanted it to come full circle. So I am headed back downtown to the mall to get as close as I can to talk to anyone who is out and about on the street. But I'm guessing at this point, most of my interviews will be with National Guardsmen and probably people just trying to, either get to work or avoid the entire thing entirely.
I was going to say, I know you just got there a little under an hour ago. So, A, I appreciate it again. But how does it feel different? I mean, obviously, the town has to feel different now than it has the last few times you've been there.
Well, it is interesting. I lived here in 2008. I had an internship on Capitol Hill with Chuck Schumer, which was a great education because, as Bob Dole used to say, the most dangerous place in Washington is in between Chuck Schumer and a camera. The man loves his press. I learned a lot in that press office, just as, a 20-something intern. But I lived in D.C. for about a year, and honestly, coming back, first of all, I noticed all the changes in real estate, kind of out more in the suburby areas of D.C. There's a lot of new developments. But honestly, out here in the suburbs, it's a little more chill. It really is just like I got here, drove from Ohio, drove about 6 hours, and just needed to move around and just walk around the neighborhood. It still feels like old D.C. right now, at least, again, away from downtown, away from the Capitol. Everyone's hunkering down. Everyone's wishing each other, stay safe this week. It's classic D.C. I mean, the cigar shops were full. The liquor store was busy. It's still just D.C. But I have, I have my feelers down on the ground and other journalists walking around D.C. And, the main thing is just lockdown. That's the main thing. People are saying they've never seen security like this. In D.C., probably since the days of 9/11, following 9/11, obviously. And so that's kind of the lay of the land is, I think, your day-to-day D.C. folks are just trying to stay home and stay away. And then dummies like me are going to try to go downtown and see what we can get. But for the most part, it really sounds like there's four layers of security to even get close to the mall around there. So, I'm going to get some pictures tomorrow and really probably have a completely different description of it entirely, but we will see. This is kind of what I've heard so far. You know, it's almost like the calm before the storm, or hopefully just the calm before the calm. It'd be nice if everybody just stayed calm for a week.
Yeah, so okay, so we've got to work backwards now, because I came across, I came across you because I was out looking for people that would be insightful into this and all the stuff that's kind of been leading up to this and all that mess. And then I kind of circled back through that list because, you know, there's a bunch of people that cover politics in D.C. and all these other things. And I found you, and then I watched your documentary about how you ran for mayor. I can't remember the title of it off the top of my head. That's bad. I want to say American Mayor. Is that it?
That is it. Yeah, American Mayor. Nice and easy. Just remember the country and remember the office.
Which, okay, so full disclosure, we're about the same age. So when you ran, what was this, 2007? You ran for mayor?
Yeah, I ran for mayor in 2007 of my hometown in Ohio. And that, I mean, obviously, spoiler alert, I did not win. But the point of the documentary, American Mayor, which you can find on Vimeo, or if you just go to AmericanMayorMovie.com, you'll find it through Vimeo that way. But, you know, basically what we try to show, it's just a short documentary, 40-minute documentary. We wanted to show that just by getting involved, you can make a difference, especially at a local level. You can still have a positive impact on local politics. So that's kind of the point of American Mayor, despite the fact that I obviously didn't win and then went on to work in Washington, D.C. the following year in 2008.
I was going to say, that's quite the gap that we've got some gaps we've got forming here.
Going you know, filmmaker. Just a 12-year gap, you know, nothing to talk about.
No, because you said you were with Chuck Schumer for a while, and now you're back doing some reporting. I feel like normally I run all over the place on this show anyways, but I really feel this right now. Like, this encapsulates everything that I normally do, but it's like on a big picture for me right now. So how did you go from...
Sure.
Making a film about running for mayor and then making the film about it to where you are now? Because there's a lot of, I mean, go ahead, take a few minutes here and describe that journey, because it's got to be almost epic, I want to say.
You know, I'll put emphasis on the almost. We will see. but it has been a heck of a journey. You know, I was always a political kid. I was fascinated at 5 years old. 1988 conventions and debates, and I don't remember any of this, but I would apparently ask my dad to stay up late so I could watch everything. And you know, I just kind of grew up that way as one of these weird political nerds. Other kids had sports and I had politics. So 1992, 1996, I was obsessed, not just with the debates, but the conventions, you know, the entire primary processes. And, you know, the more I learned, the more nerdier I got. And so I kind of stayed involved. I remember 2000, I wasn't 18 yet. I wasn't even old enough to vote, but I was campaigning for Al Gore. And I stayed up. I remember I stayed up till 2 or 3 a.m. that night watching the election results of 2000. And I think that's really what has cemented it. It's just every time there's a presidential election year, I am just fascinated and I am doing something. You know, 2004, I think I volunteered for John Kerry in Ohio. Of course, John Kerry lost Ohio, and that was the state that made him lose the entire election. You know, as we've seen since then and even before then, you know, states like Ohio, where I'm from, at least back in the day, used to be very important. Now it's crazy you're seeing new states be so important. So the entire presidential election process has always really fascinated me, especially, again, being from Ohio, where every 4 years just the TV ads just come raining down. So, you know, I've just kind of stayed involved. And, you know, 2007, I basically got out of college. And like any good millennial, I had no idea what I wanted to do. And I moved back home in with my parents. And, you know, in my case, I saw an opportunity to run for mayor and make a movie. So that's what I did on that one. But then since then, it really has been kind of pursuing the same passions, filmmaking, politics, comedy, journalism. It's always been kind of a mix of those four things. So, you know, after living in D.C., I moved to New York. I worked at the New York Film Academy for about 2 years. Then in 2010, I moved back to Ohio. I ran for Congress, actually, U.S. Congress in my home district. Once again, spoiler alert, did not win that one. And we did not make a documentary about that one, but we did make some campaign commercials that went honestly, for 2010, I'd say they went semi-viral. You know, one of them got on PBS NewsHour. They called it one of the more clever ads of the 2010 campaign season. That was a campaign ad where we had people walk up to the camera and flick it off with their middle – not the middle finger, the ring finger. And the whole idea that the ad campaign was give the two-party system the third finger, because I was running with a third political party, which is something I've always had sympathy for. Honestly, going back to it since I first saw Ross Perot speak in the 92 debates, that was a real game changer for me, seeing that there are more than two options. So you know, I'm sympathetic to third political parties, and did that run in 2010. We had the commercials that went really well. After that, I actually got into Columbia Journalism School. So that was a 10-month way for me to become an Ivy Leaguer and also improve my writing and reporting skills. So I jumped at that opportunity. As soon as I got in, I was shocked I even got in. So, and then, of course, as a middle-class person from Ohio, I obviously had to take out mucho loans for that. And I'm still paying. That's basically what I always joke is all these journalism jobs that I get, I just use it to pay off my debt to the journalism school. So that's basically what I've been doing since 2012 is kind of the freelance journalism gigs and also working on campaigns. I worked on Gary Johnson's campaign in 2012. Started writing political columns for Huffington Post in 2013, had a brief corporate video job in 2014, then I jumped back to journalism. I was actually writing political commentary for Jesse Ventura in 2015 while also making climate change videos. It was like a funny climate change series for The Guardian. Called Too Hot to Handle, and that was in 2015. And, you know, then at some point within as we were jumping from 2015 and 2016, you know, obviously politics became insane, and it was hard to look away from that. So I actually had a reporting job at Vice. And by reporting, I meant like I was a hard-hitting reporter, but as in like I would hit the bong real hard before I went out. That's how you work at Vice. That's for anyone who wants to get a job at Vice, that's how you do it. So I was a man on the street for Vice Land, the TV channel from Vice, not on the news side. I was more of the less serious political stuff in 2016. Then I worked on Gary Johnson's presidential campaign again that year, toured around the country with him, and then jumped to Mediaite in 2017 and did those videos that I was explaining earlier. And then once that freelance gig kind of weaned off, I basically ran my friend's campaign for Brooklyn Borough President in 2017. That was in New York City. I moved back to Ohio. I shot a feature-length film as a sequel to my college movie called Killer Raccoons 2, Dark Christmas in the Dark. We shot that at the end of 2017. It was just released in 2020. I ran for governor of Ohio in 2018 with the Libertarian Party there. And then I think in 2019, I think I finally took some time off and just started editing two more documentaries. I remember 2018, 2019, basically while I was running for governor, I was editing a Killer Raccoon movie at night in 2018. And then when 2019, 2020 came around, I just finished two more short political documentaries. One is kind of a sequel to American Mayor. It's called Hail Yourself America, starring Ben Kissel from Last Podcast on the Left. It was about his campaign. That was the campaign I ran in Brooklyn. We ran it for Brooklyn Borough President and kind of did the same thing we did with American Mayor. We ran, but then we also shot documentary footage of it so we could show people how we did it later, because Ben Kissel, of course, with Last Podcast on the Left, he's got millions of listeners. So, you know, in our mind, we'd love to start inspiring more young people to run for office in the future, especially local office, because that's where it all starts. And then last year, 2020, again, Killer Raccoons 2 was released. We were actually the number one comedy in America for about 2 weeks by default, because there were no other new comedies in America for about 2 weeks last summer. So there we were, historical record shows. And then the last documentary we just finished is called How America Killed My Mother. It's about the unfortunate and unnecessary death of my friend, one of my comedy friend's mothers. She passed away of diabetes at 65. And that one's a little harder. We did what we could to make it, you know, palatable, but it's a tough subject. And that one is available from howamericakilledmymother.com. Along with American Mayor and Hail Yourself America, they're all on Vimeo. We moved everything off of Amazon over to Vimeo because Jeff Bezos is making billions, and we're only making like 20 cents a month when you have your movie on Amazon Prime. So, you know, Vimeo is kind of a better deal. And, you know, people can still find it on their streaming devices and things like that. So that is about as brief as I can make that 12 years.
Well, that's what I wanted to hear from you, because there's so many things that I want to nitpick back through in a few more minutes here with you. I appreciate the third party stuff, because I guess it's months ago now, I just kind of threw the idea open of starting a new political party just because I was tired of the two political parties. So what drew you to Gary Johnson?
Yeah, well, that is the thing. I'm kind of like you. I just wanted a third party that I could kind of join and see where that led. And the Libertarian Party is technically, although it's very distant third place, it is technically the third largest political party in the United States. They do have ample ballot access, which is really the biggest problem facing third political parties, is how do you get on the ballot? You know, especially when Republicans and Democrats are both very good at keeping, you know, other smaller parties off of the ballot, off of the ballot entirely. That's kind of how I got involved with the Libertarians. I saw them as the best option for me to run as a third party. You know, running as an independent would have been interesting. That's actually still an idea that interests me possibly in the future. But for the time being, at least in you know, from about 2007 to 2010, the Libertarians seemed very interesting to me because in college, I did not like Bush and Cheney. You know, as I mentioned, I campaigned for Kerry. I really did consider myself a Democrat just because I was anti-war. You know, I was anti-drug war. I was pro-civil liberties. Obviously, following 9/11, you know, civil liberties started to slowly be eroded. And, you know, I think all the things I liked about being a progressive, anti-war, anti-Patriot Act, anti-drug war, pro-gay marriage, pro-legalization of weed, pro-choice, things like that. I found out that all of those things also applies to the Libertarians. The Libertarians are also pro-legalization of weed, pro-choice. They are anti-war. They are very pro-civil liberties. You know, the whole anti-government ideas of things. You know, I don't know. Like with any libertarian, I don't know if I subscribe 100% to the ideology. You know, I like things like local recycling and, you know, stoplights. I think those things are a good idea. And, you know, that's kind of – there's varying degrees of libertarians. There are some who want, you know, no government at all. And then there's others kind of like Gary Johnson who I think are very sensible. And if you look at Gary Johnson's record as governor, you know, despite the fact that he was kind of a weirdo running for president, maybe was too high all the time. You know, when my joke when I was running or, you know, campaigning with Gary around the country is, you know, Gary only smokes the kind of weed that makes him forget what Aleppo is and also forget that he's running for president. He likes very good weed is my point. but yeah, you know, especially Gary, you look at his record as governor, he did a good job. He cut taxes, he balanced the budget, he got rid of a bunch of waste and regulations that didn't make any sense, and you know, he got reelected in a blue state, and he served as governor for 8 years. So, you know, I think there's something really to be said about, especially where we are now. You know, you see the Republican Party fracturing. We've all basically seen, you know, conservatives have a big choice to make here in the post-Trump era of, you know, are you a conservative because you believe in limited constitutional government, or are you a conservative because you hate people that don't look like you and you just want to support, you know, a loudmouth bigot? You know, that's kind of the craziest part. You know, I just tweeted again today, you know, a little, tried to make a little louder for anyone in the back, but I just don't understand how anyone wants to usurp a constitutional republic in favor of one dude that is literally the opposite of what the American Revolution was about. So, you know, all these quote-unquote patriots and revolutionaries, these people have stormed the White House, you know, the Capitol. They were sent there by the guy in the White House, but they obviously stormed the Capitol. Everything that's happened here in the last few weeks, the last 4 years, I think is really putting the conservatives in America to a critical point. What do they want to represent, and what's the best way for them to represent that? Because I think the Republican Party is going the way of the Whigs. You know, the Whig Party in the 1850s, there were no more compromises to be made, right? The days of Henry Clay and the great compromises were slowly coming to an end in the 1850s, and the Whig Party was directly impacted by that because half of them were racist and half of them were abolitionists. And so when the Whig Party broke up, the abolitionists went and started the Republican Party and basically had some anti-slavery Democrats join them, and that became their movement. And the Whigs faltered around and kind of became the Know-Nothing Party, the Anti-Masonic Party, and these were basically purely racist parties, very much in the same vein that we see of the Trumpism or the Trump brand of conservatism. So, I think libertarians have a chance to grow. I think more often than not, what I've found in my experience is libertarians tend to be their own worst enemy. You know, kind of what I was talking about earlier, you know, someone wants to join the Libertarian Party and then someone starts yelling them about, well, if you like recycling and stoplights, you're not a real libertarian. It's like, all right, you know, I think we got to calm down on that. But I think there's a real chance they could grow, especially in the wake of what's going to happen for the Republican Party, because they're about to enter a period of reckoning and atonement. And we're going to see who makes it to the other side.
Yeah, so I got to ask about, you mentioned getting on the ballot, and of course that leads to the hot issue of a couple weeks ago. Was there widespread voter fraud? Or are we just – I get confused by this, honestly.
Yeah, me too. Well, you know, I'm always keeping my ear to the ground. I don't delete people off social media. Usually people delete me. But it was interesting. I had both a progressive friend call me and a libertarian friend call me to tell me how the election was rigged by them just sending basically the deep state or something. That's the problem with a lot of these. You know, once you start getting into the specifics, you're just like, well, wait a minute. So every single election official in every single county and every single precinct is like in on it? It makes no sense. It's too big. And you know what? I've seen elections 2000. Again, I stayed up all night as a 17-year-old high school kid watching the elections in 2000. There was clearly funny stuff in Florida that year. There was also very well-documented funny stuff in 2004 in Ohio by our Secretary of State, our Republican Secretary of State. That is usually where – and it's not voter fraud. It's election fraud. Election fraud and voter fraud are two different things. Voter fraud is when I go in and try to vote under a fake name, or I go in and try to vote twice. You know, that's me as a voter trying to fraudulent the system. Election fraud is when election officials like secretaries of state and, you know, Ken Blackwell in Ohio, he limited the voting machines in black and urban areas. And he himself was a black Republican. And then you had the secretary of state of Florida and Catherine Harris in 2000. You know, with the hanging chads and sending votes to be recounted. So here I am just thinking like, you know what? I've been on the other side of this whole election tampering, fraud, conspiracy debate. And for once, even if there was election fraud, Jim, I'll take it over Trump being president again for four more years. I'm really at a point. That's what I'm going to post Thursday is like, you know, the only sad thing about Trump leaving office is now I got to go back to hating the deep state. Because for a while there, I was almost kind of rooting for him.
Yeah, I mean, the deep state, you know, there's two terms that have really bothered me for the last bunch of years. The deep state and fake media, right? Fake news.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, because originally when I first heard fake news, you know what I thought? I thought I was in mortal trouble being a podcaster, you know. I thought they were going to go hard after us and kind of try to squash us. Instead, it turned the other way, which blows my mind still today.
Oh my gosh, yeah. Yeah, I thought The Onion was as good as Gone when they started talking about fake news. But no, I mean, obviously, now, you know, it's very vague terms, and that's what works about Trumpism. You know, and I watch my fair share of Fox. I've even checked out some pretty spooky OAN stuff. OAN's production value is so crampy. It's like a college news station with slightly more makeup. It really is just frightening what OAN is trying to be and what they're trying to do. But, you know, I try to listen to all the news networks, and that's how they do it. You know, they say big, vague terms like deep state, liberal media, fake news, the radical left. They're never really attacking actual realistic policies and people. You know, I mean, they throw AOC's face around on Fox News all the time. I'm starting to think she should be able to charge them for all the advertising they do with her face in it. But you know, it is fascinating because they just use those vague terms, and that's what you see in politics, right? That's why I liked being kind of the middle of the road libertarian. I mean, when I ran for governor of Ohio in 2018, you know, it was the same deal. The Democrat was accused of being a socialist. The Republican was accused of being a Republican, obviously, which is just as bad. But, you know, my whole thing was, hey, you know, the only time I was actually in a debate with the Republican and the Democrat running for governor of Ohio, because, you know, they never let in the libertarians into the debates. They learned their lesson when Ross Perot was in there that, you know, the third person can be very likable and middle of the road. And, you know, that's kind of how our two-party system operates. They rely heavily on right versus left, and you just use these big, vague terms. Right versus left, and then there's never really any room for gray area, which, you know, most politics is very gray. You know, it's how the sausage is made. You take a little bit from everybody. And again, I think that's what I always liked about the libertarians. It was kind of the best of both worlds. It's the fiscal sanity and the tax and economic policy of more conservatives. But then it's like the social policies of Democrats, just letting people live their lives how they see fit. Don't tell people what to do with their bodies. Don't tell them who to love. You know, that's what I kind of liked about libertarianism. So, again, I think we'll see how it's going to shape up because these next 4 years, the Trump era was crazy. But I am very interested to see what happens in the post-Trump era, how we start to clean this mess up.
Yeah, and it's definitely going to be wild to watch this is how it always goes, the overcorrection from one side to the other. Doesn't matter. Notice, I'm not saying Democrats or Republicans. I mean, every time a new president gets elected, there's always this correction, of course, back and forth, back and forth.
Right, the mandate. Every president gets elected, they say they have a mandate. Joe Biden's saying he has a mandate. When Trump got in 2016, he said he had a mandate. When Bush got reelected in 2004, you know, it was huge margins, and they said they had a mandate. But you're absolutely right. It's never that big of a swing, or at least it shouldn't be, because mostly people just, you know, want to go about their daily lives and not put so much money out of their pocket into things they don't want. But at the same time, other people need government assistance when they can get it. I mean, governing should not be that difficult. You know what I mean? I'm just thinking of all the other countries in the world that manage to have good schools and healthcare, and sometimes their government's very involved and sometimes it's not. And it just seems like in America we keep being stuck with the same thing. And I really am interested to see what happens here in the coming years, to see how we kind of break through this stalemate.
So, quick point of reference for everybody listening. We're going to go to live calls here in two questions for Travis. I got two quick questions for him. Actually, a question and a comment. So just be prepared, because I promised to keep him a half an hour. And I'm looking at the clock, and I'm like, oh, God. Because I feel like I could talk to you for a while, and we're going to have you back on some night when you're actually in Ohio, and we could talk a lot more. But anyways, where can people find you, like Facebook, Twitter, wherever you're at? Where can people find you?
Oh, sure. Social media, I'm Travis Irvine USA everywhere. It's just I did that because all the other Travis Irvines on the internet were apparently Canadian. They're very good at hockey. I am not. So I had to go ahead and show how I was different. So Travis Irvine USA on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. It is interesting, Jim. It's the same Twitter strategy as Sarah Palin and Jim Webb. They're both also have USA at the end of their name. So what could go wrong? I'm basically me, Sarah Palin, Jim Webb. We're all hanging out on the internet.
But if you could see Canada from your, if you could see Canada from your house, I'm hanging up on you. I was going to say Russia, but
I believe it was
Russia. But you know, you're a little bit closer to Canada, so
yeah. No, that would be fun. Sarah Palin, Jim Webb, and I, and then Jim Webb can like creepily talk about all the people he killed in Vietnam. It'll be a great hang.
So my 10-year-old daughter asked who was on my show tonight. I told her, you know, filmmaker, comedian, journalist, you know, just kind of read it out for her. She's always a little bit interested, but any more than those kind of free words, that's all the more she has for me, right? But she left me a note on my desk, and I'm going to just, it's a joke, okay? How does celebrity stay cool?
Do they stay in the freezer?
They have so many fans.
Oh, that's a great, I gotta say, one of my favorite dumb dad jokes to start off a comedy show with is, you know, you get brought up and people are clapping and you're thanking everyone. And then I love to, say, give it up for my biggest fan right over here, and then point to a big fan. It's either a ceiling fan or one of those big industrial fans. You know, usually they're at summer shows, but it is a great way to get some groans right off the bat. So I think your daughter is headed down a dark path. Let's face it. Stand-up comedy is a dark path, so tell her to quit it.
I'll try, but you know how that works.
Yeah. Well,
maybe
she
I should
doesn't
tell her to pursue it.
Anyways. There you go. That's a sure way to get her to quit.
Well, Travis, again, thank you, and stay safe tomorrow, and I'll be watching your tweets and all the other stuff.
Thanks so much for your time, Jim. I appreciate it.
Well, I appreciate your time.
Take care.
And that's Travis Irvine there. Literally drove in, sent me an email about 8:10 and said, hey, I made it to my destination tonight. We're good for the night, so let's do it. So I was a little antsy about that all evening. So there's all that. So phone lines are open. I know there's I've seen Germantown Runner saying that Rush said some things that kind of aligned with what I just said, which kind of scares me. Of course, the running joke is that I'll replace Rush Limbaugh someday, which is even a worse joke than what I just kind of went through with the fan joke. Election stuff. There's a lot going on in the world otherwise. If you have a pardon, right? I heard John Kirkaloo on with Reese Stranahan this afternoon on The Backstory, their new show together on Radio Sputnik. If you've heard Leon before, you've heard him talking about being on Sputnik with a different show, but he's got a new show now with an obviously new co-host. And he was talking to John, former guests here. That's kind of why it drew me in a way, to a degree, about he asked, at one time he asked Giuliani about a pardon, and he was told $2 million. Heard it right from the guy. It was a big light up in the Washington Times, of course, New York Times, excuse me, full credit to New York Times for running that story on the front page of the Sunday paper. But as usual, around here, I like hearing things straight from the horse's mouth. And I heard that from John on that show this afternoon. And I went, is that how this system is supposed to work? And I was outright offended by that. Just saying. I'm outright offended. No, Brian, it's not. Go listen to John Kirkaloo on Backstory. It's not out hearsay. He tells the story. He was there, I'm telling you, straight from the mouth of the man who asked the question. There's a lot of fake news as the world goes around, but hearing it straight from John this afternoon, not that I wanted to, not discount what the New York Times said, but there's some degree to that. So, So there's a lot going on in the world. There's that. I'm interested, again, for all the world to come down a bit. Of course, my world's not coming down anytime soon, but that's a whole different conversation for another time. Right? There's a lot going on here on the Duck Pond. Next week, Nick Redfern. So I got to get into Rendlesham Forest, which is just... I have never been there. Never been into that topic. I've kind of skirted around it, but we're going to dive deep into it for the next week because that's kind of something we need to cross off the list once and for all. And looking forward to talking to Nick about it because Nick is one of the most phenomenal guests that have been through this program. So, if John was on, I'd call him right now, but he's not on. I'm telling you guys. It's just outrageous, right? I'm just insulted, right? Because that is something that shouldn't be for sale. That is something that should be left for actual justice. So there's all that. And by the way, can anybody find me a story that isn't related to politics right now? I mean, honestly, anywhere, somewhere. I don't know. Is there any? Yeah, or Germantown, you could call in and tell me what you heard this afternoon. I did not get the chance to operate. I was going to listen to Glenn Beck this morning. I didn't do that either. So I don't know if Germantown Runner caught him. I was going to, but as they say, life happens, especially right now. A lot of fun things going on. I had a list, and I guess I got to go find it. That isn't it. So many little things. For those who are out there listening, Mike Pence is going to the inauguration tomorrow, which is a interesting thing, in my opinion. I know some people out there, I think, are saying different things about should Trump go or not. It's interesting. I'll be honest with you. I'm not sure how I feel about that one way or the other. I see a story here from the Wall Street Journal that Trump wants to start his own political party, call it the Patriot Party, which would be that split of the Republican Party. All right. So that's a fun thing there. Germantown Runner, you didn't tell me our Capitals and Penguins were playing tonight. I just see that was a... another thing that pops up on my feed. Normally he's always on that. Are you watching the Capitals game? Is that what the multitasking is going on here? No, I'm just kidding. Not really. I know he is. If they're on. If that's actually accurate. That's no help. So there's all of that. There's a lot going on right now. So that wasn't what I was looking for. I just got stuck in Twitter trends. Oh, boy. I don't even know how many games into the hockey season they are, honestly. I just seen that trend, and that's the first time that I had actually even caught a whiff of that. I guess I seen they were back. Was that last week? I don't know. Honestly, I'm just kind of in this bubble that's just kind of... hard to shake out of right now. So, Cat Ward just sent me a show that is not related to politics. Pablo Escobar's cocaine hippos threatened to take over Colombia. That is just phenomenal. Just when you, I just can't. And so I clicked away from that story to find another story I'm going to read to you here in a second. I'm going to scroll this list real quick. I'll read that headline to you here in a second as well. That's pretty good. I don't know if this is a Cat, do you know anything about this news site? Are we actually reading real news here or not? Because I have no idea. It was selected among PC's magazine's top 100 sites, so I have to believe that somebody did some I just want to make sure I'm not reading headlines like The Onion right now, because, God, that'd be fun either way, right? CNN loses to both Fox and MSNBC for the first time in 20 years. Yeah, I've seen the massive layoffs at Fox. I think, again, German Tunner, I know that you're appreciating this, that that's kind of the beginning of the end for all of them, isn't it? Because as they all kind of cut down... Right, this is kind of the conversation we're always having around here about new media versus old media versus... Well, okay, so if we're calling old media newspapers, is it media for TV? And new media being the internet? Is that fair? Can we all use that term for here, for now on? Old media being print, media being TV, and radio kind of falls in that gray area in between. Is that fair? Okay. I mean, honestly, as we look at it, I mean, here's the thing, though. Yeah, I hate regular season overtime. German turnaround. Sorry. Look, something shiny in my chat room. If you haven't been on the Duck Pond, this is why right now you need to be here. Because we've got talking book sales and politics and Penguins updates, or in some cases, Capital updates. I'll give him the credit. We've had a love-hate relationship about hockey over the years. Sometimes it's good, sometimes it's bad. Book sales, that pops up too. Okay, so book sales comes back to this new media, right? Because that's digital compared to old. And I seen, oh God, I wish I would have saved it because I wasn't necessarily planning on doing this topic right now, about how somebody was suing Amazon for lost income on their ebook. Oh God, I wish I would have saved that because that is phenomenal. That I don't think they're going to win because I don't have enough money for a good legal case because it just doesn't seem to be that way. But Germantown Runner just blew my mind here. Sorry. Again, this is the kind of dynamics that happen on the Duck Pond. The UK introduces a plot to give 5.5 million Hong Kongers visas, easy for me to say, just about 70% of the population. That is mind-numbing. So the first one wasn't real cat? Oh, boy, she made me go Ron Burgundy, guys. That's not good. So I shouldn't read the other two? Yeah, I'm reading the other two anyways. If you want real news, go get the headlines yourself. And anymore, I'm not sure. Right? Honestly, I'm not sure about anything. The other one, this is a good story. I've been reading it. Well, I've read part of it here. About arsonists paid to torch churches. I mean, that's great. I mean, that's not great, but it's just funny. Well done by them. And Cat lucky to survive being in a running washer, which is just phenomenal as well. Because we all hear about all these cat stories. I mean, that's just... I believe that one. It may not... This version of the story may not be true, but I believe that story to be true somewhere along the line. So, for sure. What else is going on here? Let's see. Yeah, that isn't working right, but that's okay. We'll deal with that later. Okay, that sucks. Something happened there. Okay. Flint Lauder Chargers. I gotta talk about Flint sometime. Think I could get Erin Brockovich on the show? Anybody? Anybody know her? I'd love to get her on to talk about that. Here's an interesting one. Yeah. I wish he'd picked the governor for something. Honestly, I like John Fetterman. I don't necessarily agree with John Fetterman politically, but at least I kind of feel he'd be... I asked him to be on, by the way. Full disclosure. Hard stop. So, a Netflix. I see the story about this afternoon. Man, I should have saved. I gotta start saving these things. Somebody needs to teach me how I can save these things so I can access them again, but not have them all in my bookmarks. There has to be a method for that. I seen a thing about how Netflix is dumping a bunch of movies this year. I think it was close to 60, so one a week. Right? And the argument was, well, it must have been a Gary Vaynerchuk's social media. I think it was, I know it was him talking about it, so it had to have been him somewhere on his social media. Instagram, probably. Yes. Go Penguins. Sorry, Germantown Run. Of course, you put it up there. So, that's what happens. For the record, Sidney Crosby, the Sid the Kid, Barry's one, apparently, to beat his beloved Capitals. So, sorry for your loss. Of course, it doesn't really matter. It's regular season, and it's way early in the season, too. So, a lot of things will... I won't say can. I will say will change between these ball clubs. Is it ball clubs? Did I use that word right? Anyways. Ball clubs. I don't think that's right. They play hockey. It can't be right. Okay. Anyways. About Netflix. Back to Netflix for a minute. The comments Gary Vaynerchuk was making about how you could dump these movies and remain competitive. And, of course, then I seen on LinkedIn yesterday about how because these sites, right, Netflix, Hulu, Disney Plus, all these subscription sites, right? Now, I'm here to tell you something, too, about that here in a second, but let's stay on topic on this. About how easy it is to get into, right? Because you just sign up for a month and then you can just cancel too. So it's easy for people, consumers, to bounce around and don't have to necessarily pay for all these sites. And how that's causing problems, imagine that, for Netflix and these other companies because, I mean, think about it. The Netflix, we'll just use this for an example. Netflix just lost The Office. If that was one of the reasons you're gone. You're joining Peacock for a while because you like The Office until you get burned out on The Office. I mean, I almost thought about it. And I don't, I mean, I'm not a huge fan. I mean, I am a fan of The Office and I do enjoy watching it because it's kind of one of those things I do. But man, I found something else to watch. I mean, I'm not flipping because of that, but there are people, those diehards out there that'll flip. Now, this is where it gets interesting. Now I'm going to bring this back, pull it back to something that matters. I know right now, a bunch of podcasters listen to the show. A bunch. Not going to lie. Right? I have a bunch of friends that host podcasts. I've been very good to them through the years. Not going to lie. Right? Give them free advice. Help them out. Free promotion. Have them on the show. Everything I can do to help somebody out, I will do. Okay? And then you see this. This is where the interesting thing comes. And this argument I just made, I'm going to make to you. Well, none of my friends. I mean, there's a few that do, but a few people I've talked to who sell these memberships, which is great, right? Because you get the 2, 3, 4, 7, 11.99 a month. And yes, I jumped up to $11.99 a month, and I've seen others that are more than that a month. Are we smoking? Honestly. You have to provide so much value for me to even think about paying you $11.99 a month. Your head spins. You're not Netflix. Sorry. Okay? But here, back to what I'm saying, though. Okay, so Germantown Runner loves the Mallard Report. That goes without saying. But I put it up behind a paywall, and I start charging $3.99 a month, right? Well, Germantown Runner's crappy and, you know, on the poor side of life. Not saying that directly because I know he's okay, but he likes listening to the show but doesn't want to pay $3.99 a month. He comes in, he downloads 6 months worth, cancels. I get my $3.99 for a month. He comes back in 6 months, downloads another 6 months worth, and I get my other $3.99 for him for the year. So I've only actually made $8 from him from the year, right? Instead of making $48 a year, that costs me $40, and how many ever potential listeners by just not giving it away. Yeah, see, this is where the market's at right now. This is a real thing Netflix and Hulu are talking about. Don't sleep on this, independent content creator. Man, I'm fired up about this, you can tell. I mean, I thought I was fired up about politics, but man, this is just, ooh, this burns me, because I'm telling you, there's a lot of content creators out there right now who think it's going good, right? And there's another website that has become fashionable during COVID, right? Why doesn't it work that way, Brian? Because people are lazy and will just send you the $5 every month because there are people that will do that, yes. I'm telling you, though, it's getting to a saturation point where it's going to change. Where, okay, Hulu, Netflix, Disney Plus, Discovery Plus, Peacock, and that's five. Right? Those are your digital players on that side. As things tighten, as people start coming out of lockdowns and are looking for expendable cash, people are going to stop paying for streaming services. Agree or disagree? I'm just taking a second here, because as things start to change and as people... See if I think this is who this is. Who? Welcome.
Yeah, I can't type this because it's way too much. So basically what you're going to do is everybody left cable TV because it got too expensive, right? So
right.
You have to add HBO,
yeah.
Showtime, Cinemax, whatever, $10 a year, $6 there. This is the same thing. What they're doing is like Discovery Plus is doing it. 99% of the shows, they give you one or two, three shows, and all the rest is playing on Discovery Stream. People aren't going to pay $6.99 there. They're not going to buy Peacock. They're not going to buy Hulu. They're not going to buy all this stuff. In the end, you're talking about spending five times as much than your cable bill. So people
right.
will just dump it all. And what's going to happen is the fans are going to get pissed off. And then they're going to just boycott them. And in this society, that's what people do. They boycott shit. They're not paying for any more of this. I got Disney Plus because it was free for 6 months through Verizon. I doubt I'm going to pay them anything else. Well, my children will decide it because they're young enough that they want to watch it. But in general, you know what? I watched it was on Discovery's channel, and now all these new episodes, every episode now is just going to be on the Plus. So they'll give you a week to try it out, and then they charge you $6.99. No, I don't want to pay $6.99 for it. I don't really have to watch your crap. I don't.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Or if you did want to watch it, you're going to pay that $6.99, binge watch it, and then be done.
No, I'm not going to spend, you know, because they're going to drip out the episodes. It's going to drip out.
Well, I know, eventually, but eventually it'll be all out, and you can just go back through and grab it. That's what I'm saying.
Well, whatever. So for $6, they're going to lose. The streaming thing is going to lose. They don't have a good price point. They're not offering me anything I want to see. I don't want to see Discovery Plus 24/7, and it's going to be a big problem.
I don't know, man. I've been watching the Moonshiners a lot lately. I don't know.
Moonshiners is great, but you know what? There's so many episodes of that program. You know, some will pick up another show, and some will come out on cable TV with a Moonshiners type of show, and people will forget about the original Moonshiners and go someplace else. These people are so damn greedy, and they don't know that they're cutting their nose up to spite their face.
Now, my question for you is, I know you're kind of this thought, right? Roll us out of this conversation for a minute, right? But just for
sure.
A moment, just follow me for a minute. A bunch of videographers, right? Small documentarians, you know, people that make films. I know you've kind of been around some of those people, so you know what I'm talking about.
Yep.
Like the guy, Travis, that I just had on. Guy that makes, you know, making documentaries on, you know. There's a bunch of them, right?
Mm-hmm. Right?
There's a bunch of us content creators who could put video somewhere and be part of a package, right? So either
sure.
Package A or the bigger package B. Either way you want to cut this. At some point, we're all going to get together and come out for, let's say, $4.99 a month and give away, I mean, put so much stuff in there that people may be interested in, but may not
Here's
be interested.
Here's your bigger problem.
Go ahead.
Right. So you have like years and years of shows, and if people want to go look up your archive, they can go through it, and you know, at least you should be getting paid for something. But the problem you have is, and I don't mean any disrespect, I don't want to pay for old content. I don't want to pay for any old content. And most people aren't offering any fantastic that says, you know what, hey, I'm going to pay $5 for that. Or I want to pay $6.95 a month for that. So it's going to bite people in the ass. And what's going to happen, and this goes back to the politics side, the censorship is going to continue, and it's going to get worse. And if you think, because you are straddling a line between politics and paranormal and whatever it is, you're a target. All these other podcasters are targets. And, you know, I wouldn't even pay for Spotify to listen to Joe Rogan. I think Joe Rogan sold his soul.
This is
the point. It's good. If you get a deal from somebody, I say go for it. Go take it. You're guaranteed to get paid. But you're going to lose listeners. People have had enough of this. First of all, the last year and a half has killed people. Is lucrative, like they're spending money for these little things.
That's what I'm saying.
Okay, they're not paying. Right, they're not going to pay Peacock $6.99, Hulu $6.99, Disney Plus $6.99, Discovery Plus. I mean, everybody's coming out. HBO has one. Everybody's like, you know what? If I pay for cable TV, and why do I have to actually pay? You know, I'm just paying one price for cable TV. Why am I paying extra for everything else?
And that's only going to get worse, by the way. As people start getting back together and all this other stuff, and hopefully 6 months or a year, whenever all this craziness starts to go away, I'm not going to have such a demand for me to have all these different streaming apps so I can entertain myself.
Exactly. How much? You're a parent. How much TV can you really watch? Right?
24/7, 365. Oh, you mean my children? I need to subtract shows out of there too. So hold on.
Right, no. and Dave talked about cutting the cord. Let me tell you something. I know people that have put this stuff on Amazon, and they're really pissed off at Amazon because Amazon's not paying enough, and they're getting burnt. That you know, there's a lot of deals where they stop running shows and they'll cut you off in the middle. Amazon's going to be a problem. I mean, as a content creator, and I'm trying to create content, there are a lot of free sites you can put it on. You can put things on. I have one of those Roku thingies. And, you know, there's a lot of free content providers. They're going to make it on the advertisement like TV did. And we're just going around in circles. Before the people that are putting out the content, ABC, NBC, all these, you know, finally caught on to the fact that people are dropping cable because it's too expensive. You know, fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, I'm going to smack you in the face. You know, I mean, it's just not going to happen. I don't see it happening.
Right.
People don't have that kind of money just to drop. You know, if when they look at their bill and they finally get that credit card bill and they have 25 things at $7, that's a lot of money. And
Mr.
then
Sir.
At that point, cable companies are going to be like, well, we have to raise the internet price because people are dropping our cable services and they want more content on the internet. Then they'll throttle you. They'll say, well, oh, you like to stream? Go to tier 6 because this new administration is going to do shit like that.
Anyways.
They're going to rock this.
Well,
but whatever.
That's a great conversation for another time because we are out of time. Thanks again, man.
Bye, everybody.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Mount Report. Stay tuned for details on saving money at the Duck Pond Shop. I hope you enjoyed this report. Please subscribe so that you can join us again. And if you appreciate the show, leave us some stars or a review. For more notes from this show or other great shows, check out Mallard.com. A reminder, the views and opinions of this show are those of the host and guest and do not represent any sponsors, affiliates, or any other partners of the Mallard Report. Now for your money-saving tip. Promo code Mallard at checkout of duckpondshop.com.
where you can get your t-shirt, coffee mug, and other great products. That's promo code Mallard at checkout, duckpondshop.com. Until next week, stay safe and keep quacking.
Hello everyone. My name is Tom Kearns, and I host the Anglo-Saxon England podcast, where I cover the history and culture of England from the departure of the Romans in the 5th century to the Norman conquest in 1066. So far, we've surveyed the collapse of Roman rule in Britain, the migration of the Anglo-Saxons, and the history of Northumbria from its beginnings in the mists of legend to its destruction at the hands of Viking raiders in the 9th century. I hope you'll come and give it a go.